Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 359 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. And today my guest is Sarah Tetlow. And Sarah is the founder and CEO of a company called Firm Focus. And what Firm Focus does is it works with attorneys and law firms to improve a variety of things, such as their productivity, ridding themselves of the art of procrastination, helping them delegate. She has a complete system for how to manage your email inbox and a variety of those kinds of, you know, productivity enhancements that will allow you to become more efficient and more effective as an attorney and as a business owner. So I really enjoyed this conversation with Sarah, and we're going to have her back to talk about a second part of what we did today. But until then, please join me and welcome my friend, Sarah Tetlow. Sarah Tetlow, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, Neil. It's great to be here with you.
It's wonderful having you with us from NoCal, as they say, the northern part of California, which I think hasn't slid off into the ocean yet, right?
I don't think so. I think I'm still attached.
Yeah. So, Sarah, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, excellent. So, my company is Firm Focus, and I'm very proud of that company name because I focus on helping lawyers and law firms with time management issues and productivity and organization. I worked in law firms for 15 years before I created this company and have a real passion and drive to make sure lawyers are managing their time effectively, being productive, but also not burning out, not getting stressed, getting better sleep. And so I help design a proactive and intentional day-to-day, week-to-week, and get the right things done.
Now, what makes you think that attorneys aren't very good at time management or want to be more productive or want to manage their email more effectively? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Do you think as a group of people, we need that?
Neil, I think I forgot to mention in my intro, I worked in law firms for 15 years.
No, you did. You mentioned it. Right. I'm being facetious. Because obviously there's a need for that. You know, I'm the poster boy for that at some level. You know, I'm always looking for, you know, productivity hacks and time management approaches. And what I've discovered, maybe you can, you know, speak to this a little bit, is there isn't really any magic bullet. There's no one hack. There's no one, you know, methodology that you can use. You really have to approach it holistically from the entire operation of your law firm and look where you can get the greatest bang for your buck, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. And certainly the billable hour is, it necessitates you having some time management skills. So you're right. You have to look at it holistically, but that billable hour that's out there, and obviously with solo and small firms, it may not be as high as big firms. Or if you're running a solo, you may not create those metrics for yourself, but you probably do. There's probably some revenue that you're hoping to hit, which then equates to a billable hour. And even a billable hour requirement out there, or if you're trying to bill, say, 6 hours a day or 7 hours a day, that equates to 10 hours a day because there is admin, there's business development, there's time that you're not on the clock, whether that's billable or not billable. And so to answer your initial question, what makes me think that lawyers want to be more productive is it's just sort of built in the expectations and the culture of law firms. And so what I like to do is help people increase billable time and decrease time at work. And that does mean time management, email management, attention management, and project and task management, as well as being very realistic at what you can get done today and what maybe needs to be the priority tomorrow or the next day.
Well, the fact of the matter is that even if your billing model is not based on an hourly rate, so you're doing contingencies or you're doing fixed fee work, being efficient in the delivery of those services are what's critical for solos. You know, larger firms can absorb a little bit of non-productivity, but solos cannot, because if you're not producing revenue, you're going to be a short-lived law firm.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody can use that. There's, by way of my explanation, I think everybody can use an improvement in time management, attention management, email management, and all those matters that we just talked about. So how did you go about developing your approach? What I know that you built it based on your experience working in a number of different firms, mm-hmm. but then how did you kind of come upon, this is the structure I want to offer?
Yeah. And honestly, it was an evolution as my business continued to grow, and it's probably still an evolution. But essentially, first, we need to focus on some of the goals. So what are you hoping to improve upon, or what are you hoping to find more time for at the end of our working together? And then I look at how are you organized? So how are you organized physically and mentally? So I can get a better understanding of, you know, who I'm working with, what it looks like to be, for example, Neil. And then we start to get into the productivity coaching, which, just to throw out some variables that go into time management, these are all the different areas I'm looking at: perfectionism, procrastination, analysis paralysis, distractions, interruptions, multitasking, prioritization, the organization. So all of these pieces, I'm helping my clients with what areas they have strengths on and what areas they have some weaknesses on. Typically, not always, but typically distractions, multitasking, interruptions are a big piece of it. A lot of times there's that perfectionism that comes into play. As a result, people procrastinate. And so through my coaching, and what we really work on is the habits of basically like, where are you tracking your projects and tasks? How are you breaking them down? How are you prioritizing your day, making sure that the number one thing you're looking at is your schedule or what's on calendar, because that's what's already non-negotiable in terms of appointments and meetings, the prep, the follow-up, and then what is it you're trying to work on and how does that fit into the mathematical puzzle of how much time you have in your day? And so helping build those habits. So that's a bit of what it looks like, the coaching and the value that they get out of it.
Well, I was thinking that when you went down that litany of attributes, mm-hmm. golly day, I'm guilty of all of them. I said procrastination, check. Disruption, interruptions, check. You know, and I think a lot of us say, well, gee, there's, as you said in my previous life, that's a target-rich environment to work from. So let's just pick one for the moment. And procrastination, I think, is really subtle. I mean, we can talk about a lot of obvious ones, but I think procrastination is really subtle. None of us like to think of us as being a procrastinator. We don't purposely put things, doing things off.
Mm-hmm.
But the net result is, you know, it gets further and further away. So what are some of the things that you work on in trying to reduce that level of procrastination?
Yeah. So I want to give credit here to Dr. Timothy Pickle. What his decades of research has uncovered is
And I'm going to quote something. So procrastination is a subconscious desire to feel good right now. Procrastination, if we're thinking about fight or flight, procrastination is freezing. So I'm actually, it's funny that the one you picked, because I lead a group office hours for my clients and I have that today, which is why I had that right in front of me, because I'm leading that conversation this afternoon with my clients. But it's really quite fascinating, because what you're procrastinating on may not even be in and of itself the thing that is like stressing you out or making you freeze. It could be something completely unrelated. So for example, maybe you, I'm trying to think of a really good example, but you love writing, who loves writing RFOs, but if you love writing RFOs as an example, and you have one you need to work on right now, but you're procrastinating on it, and you're going, I enjoy these, and yet I just can't seem to get myself to do this right now. If you ask yourself, what is stressing me out in this moment? It's probably something completely unrelated. It could be a fight you had with your spouse this morning and it's stressing you out. And so the thought of getting into a project is causing you to freeze. And so you go for these quick wins, whether that's email, whether that's social media or news or shopping or looking at your phone. But then you get that dopamine release from finding something that can give you that dopamine release, those quick wins, whereas working on the RFO, for example, is not going to give you a quick win. It's a pretty big project you got to sit and do. So maybe an RFO is not the best example, but you probably understand what I'm saying there is that...
Yeah, I do.
It just, yeah.
I have, you know, your personal experience there, you know, my personal life. I need to do this affidavit, send it to the county in which my mother's home was located. I've had that on my list of things to do for weeks. And I, you know, I struggle with just getting started on it. I just seem to be procrastinating. And the ironic thing is the fact that I haven't done it is what keeps me up in the middle of the night. I'll go up in the middle of the night, like, I gotta do that damn affidavit. What is my problem? And then just so consequently, I wake up, I do my stress test app on my phone and say, hey, you're stressed. Like, no kid. No kid. Start my affidavit for me, and that would help. And so my approach, and I just adopted it this week, is, okay, I'm going to set aside 15 minutes. Just 15 minutes. I'm not going to do the whole thing. I'm going to do 15 minutes and get started on it and just keep chipping away at it until it's done. And then I won't then I won't be procrastinating over this thing and stressing over it anymore.
And you know what's funny, Neil, is the fact, if there's a vicious cycle going on here, you probably already saw it. So
that's what I was going to say, is the procrastination vicious cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So the stress that, because you haven't done it, then you are stacking more stress, which means you're going to further procrastinate. But procrastination is just a habit. It's not an identity. You're not a procrastinator, but you... And I'll give you if I score you right now, you get an A for even identifying what it is that's stressing you out or you're procrastinating on. So that's a good first step. So let me ask you this. Are you, when we're done recording here, are you going to start working on that affidavit?
Well, not in the next 15 minutes, because my schedule's already packed, but I do have it scheduled.
Okay.
I do have it scheduled.
Today?
Yes.
Okay. I'll check in on you.
Now, I'm going to tell you, I am the master at manipulating my calendar.
Ah.
You know, and that kind of segues into, you know, calendar management, task management, discussion. I think there are two kinds of people. Those who block time on their calendar to get work done. For a moment, let me take one step back. We always put meetings and, you know, interactions with other people on the calendar, right? Meetings and seminars or Zoom calls or whatever. Those always go on the calendar. I'm talking about blocking. There are two kinds of people that then look at the open time on their calendar and they block out time to get a specific task or project done. And those who have a task list, task manager, and prioritize the tasks in the task manager. And when they have that block of time, the block of time is identified by their calendar. But what needs to be done is defined by their task management system. I see the world divided into two sets of people.
Is it?
That inconsistent with your views? Or?
It's complementary to my views.
Okay.
And I'll just elaborate by saying, so certainly the people that can block time on your calendar, I think that is a skill to be so detailed and accurate to know, okay, for this half hour, I'm going to work on this affidavit, and then I have this meeting, and then I think that the challenge, and then following that's the yeah. that's the key is following it, because I think a lot of people have the idea of doing that, and then they don't follow it, and then that affidavit is on the calendar in time in the past wasn't done, and either you have stuff on your calendar that's not done in time behind you, and then you don't know how to pull it forward. Or you have to move it around. And that takes a lot. You're actually spending more time calendaring and reshuffling than actually just getting the work done. Oh, but yeah. There are people that can time block effectively.
But let me tell you, my calendar's pretty. You know, it's color-coded. It's color-coded and I'm not sure my calendar, other than recording meetings and, you know, prearranged calls and things like that, I don't know that it works for me as effectively as I would like it to.
So I would say, so then it sounds like your calendar is probably quite similar to mine, where you're right. Some people operate off task lists and have a lot of maybe white space on their calendar.
Yeah.
The hybrid that I'm bringing up is I do a little bit of both. So certainly what is on my calendar are meetings, of course. And yes, I also color code. And just to talk about some terminology, Outlook recognizes two things on your calendar. You either have a meeting or you have an appointment. And a meeting means somebody else has been invited to it. And an appointment means it's time on your calendar for yourself. And so meetings, of course, are on my calendar. And then what I do, Neil, is I will block off, like hold, do not book, or focus time. I just a little footnote here. I cannot stand Microsoft's Viva focus time. Some people might be familiar with when it automatically like puts focus time on your calendar. I'm like, Microsoft, you don't know when I want to focus. I know when I want to focus. So don't bother. I've turned that feature off, but I do recommend putting that on your calendar. Then what I do with that time. So for example, today I have 2 1-hour blocks of hold, do not book. And how I don't know what I'm going to do with that time until I get closer to that day. So by yesterday, I knew what I'd be working on during those block times today. So the difference, I think your listeners probably understand this, or you understand this, Neil, but the difference is if I tried to last week say, okay, next Wednesday at 10 a.m., you're going to work on X, and then I'm here now and X is no longer a priority, maybe I even got it done, then I have to finesse my calendar too much. Whereas I use it to block the time to get the work done, but then my project management tool, which I use Microsoft's free Microsoft Planner, I use that to then prioritize and build out what I'm going to work on each day.
So I think I'm in the same camp there.
Yeah. And yeah. So it's sort of a hybrid.
And in my task management list, when things get to be critical, I change the priority.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can look at a subset list that just lists my high priority tasks. And at some point the night before, I'll look for the free time on my calendar and say, okay, which high priority task can I get done in this time frame? And that's kind of what I'll focus on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of similar.
I do want to make one distinction, though, where I absolutely blocked time off on my calendar with intent. It is so for me, my role, that's a lot of speaking or a big deliverable for a client.
Yeah.
And for others that are listening in their world, it might be a hearing or a depo or a trial or a big meeting they have to file. When I calendar those, I do backtrack on my calendar and I find, you know, blocks of 2 or 3 hours, and I just put hold, prep for X, prep for Y. And that way I may not need all of those blocks, but I don't all of a sudden I'm week of and I'm going, oh my gosh, it's, you know, for me, it's the presentation next week and I haven't put aside any time to work on it. And I don't want to give up my weekends with my kids or my nights. So this way I can, because our time
I like
so
that a lot.
Yeah.
I like that a lot, Sarah. So
support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexiclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. So, you know, it's a big task. And trials, or depositions are perfect example. You put that appointment or that meeting on your calendar, but you pre-block out time to work on those deliverables. Mm-hmm. And as you said, you may not end up needing all of it, but it's there on the calendar, and you've at least allocated enough of your time to get the job done.
Right.
I think it's really pretty smart. Now, I said there's only, in my view, there's two types of people when it comes to calendaring and task management. There's really a third type, but I think they're so misguided that I don't include them in this categorization. Nothing. People who use their email as their task management or calendaring repository. So I know you spend a lot of time with clients managing the email beast. And so tell me a little bit about that, what your views are about using the email as your task manager.
I sigh because I've seen so many inboxes and people are so stressed and overwhelmed by email. And so I created a method or a system to manage the inbox. And I'll just talk a little bit about what, so it's called ART, A-R-T-T. And ART is an acronym that stands for Action, reference tracking trash. And it's based off of science, research, and the 5Ds principles. So the 5Ds principle is a productivity principle that says, as a human being, you have 5 choices of what you do with any action you need to take. So this is true from getting up, brushing your teeth, to writing a brief, to research, to sending an email. So those choices, Neil, are do, delay, delegate, diminish, or delete. And what I realized is I kept seeing more and more clients stressed by email, overwhelmed by email, asking me if I had any tips on how to manage the inbox. Your email, your inbox, is somebody communicating something to you because they want you to do something with it. They want you to take some sort of action, read it, respond to it, sign it, pay it, listen to it, watch it, delete it. No one wants you to delete it, but we do. And so I translated it. I realized that a lot of times looking at email, we get so overwhelmed by it because we go, that's something I need to do versus, you know, something I need to delete or something I need to save. And our choices of what to do with email don't differ. You can do it now. You can do it in the future. It's a big project that you need to do over time. You need something back from someone else to unlock bottlenecks before you can do something with that email, or you just don't need it and you're going to delete it, or you need to save it. So I created R, and those acronyms, it teaches behavioral change and a way to think about your inbox differently. And then I have it built out as a course, artemail.com, where the course actually, from start to finish, you'll see full implementation of your inbox. And I have taught it to many, many hundreds of professionals that have reported back that it has changed their life because it just teaches a different way to think about managing your inbox and then shows you how to actually do it. And then it creates this new way that you think, and it becomes almost, you know, second nature just to manage your email more, make decisions quicker and moving.
I will tell you that oftentimes to me, it seems so daunting a project to implement a strategy such as this that I'm like, oh, man, I don't even know where to start. And, you know, it sounds great. I grasp the concept, but it just seems like overwhelming. How do people take a sip from that fire hose and get started in a way that's manageable?
First, I think just learning and understanding that what I just mentioned about, you know, email, you have all of these choices. And then what are you doing with emails? So on the one hand, it's understanding that. And then on the other hand, and also in the course, and I would recommend using automation, so rules or filters or quick steps. I actually recommend not using flags, or if you do use flags, have a deal with yourself that they're cleared out every day. So the flag is designed as like, okay, I have to get back to these 3 people. And then at the end of the day, those flags are cleared because as soon as you have 3 flags from yesterday and then 5 flags from today and you clear 2 of them and then you add and then the system fails. So
can I just add a little factoid there for
sure?
I just read yesterday that the extensive use of flags in your email system slows your email client down.
Yeah.
And particularly, and this was with respect to Apple Mail, which is the mail client of choice for me and most Apple users. If you got lots and lots of messages that are flagged, it's actually going to slow the email process down. So it displays slower, it's more sluggish. So there's a good reason, you know, to clear those flags every day for, you know, just to keep your email system running in an optimal fashion. So just a little something I read yesterday.
That's awesome. I love that tip. I imagine if it's true for Apple Mail, it's probably also true for Outlook flags.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
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 But even just that overwhelm, like I feel like if you are someone who flags, in my experience, when I do flag and then it's reminding me later or they're screaming, I feel like they're just screaming at me and they're just reminding me of all my failures. Yeah. And I do feel very, very strongly about not inbox zero. It's never, even my system doesn't teach inbox zero, but it is about inbox zen, and it teaches the workflow of mailbox out of the mailbox. You're doing something with it, and that may mean delete, that may mean save, or it may mean an action is needed, and what to then do with the message so it doesn't live in your inbox, but that you're maintaining control of it. And so your inbox, just to kind of wrap this part up, is it should not be your to-do list. If you are operating out of your inbox as what it is you're going to work on today, then that is contributing to, it's contributing to inefficiencies, it's contributing to working in reactive mode and waking up in the nighttime going, I didn't do X, because that X was the one thing that you needed to do, but instead everybody else was telling you what to do all day long.
Yeah. And to a large degree, it's somebody else dictating to you how you're going to spend your time.
Then that's one of the beautiful things about having a solo practice. While you have clients you have to service, you get to decide. You should be able to decide how you're spending your day.
For sure. Now, I knew somebody who, after having read the Getting Things Done book.
Mm-hmm. David Allen,
thank you.
Uh-huh.
I would say Josh Allen, but that's a throwback. David Allen, Getting Things Done, who advocates something very similar.
Uh-huh.
What they did was they created folders in their email system, essentially do, delay, delegate, diminish, delete. And, you know, the job was, in processing email, which they only did twice a day, they would slide them into the appropriate folder.
Mm-hmm.
Do it or slide it in the appropriate folder. Then, following your tip, implement a rule that looks at that folder and says that that email has been in that folder longer than X, you know, do something, raise my awareness of it, and then I get to decide again, is it in the right folder or should I move it down? And when I get down to, if I keep moving it down and it gets in the delete folder and it stays in the delete folder for longer than Y number of days, then it's automatically deleted. It wasn't important anyway. And I thought that was a pretty smart implementation of that system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, I mean, it sounds, on the one hand, it sounds great. I'm very familiar with David Allen, and you mentioned the do, the delay, the delegate. That's where my 5Ds, that principle comes into play for art. The one thing I would be nervous about is, one, if the do folder, the do folder is 50 emails, you're just basically processing another inbox of things you're intending on doing, but you're still basically, by the nature of the folder itself, you're still delaying them.
Actually, there's no do folder.
Oh, okay. That's your inbox.
It's do, you know, if it's something you'll be responding to right now, do it. Mm-hmm. Get it off the plate.
Yeah. Okay.
And if not, then it goes into delay.
Got it.
Yeah. And yeah. I had a friend of mine this week post on Facebook. He was saying, both he and his wife are attorneys, and he did a screenshot of his phone showing the mail icon. And you know how it has a badge there that shows the number of unread emails?
Uh-huh.
And he had 30,000.
Oh my gosh, yep.
And he was somehow proud of that. And I'm like, that would give me the heebie-jeebie. If that badge is looking at me when I process my email, I have more than two unread emails, I can't function. I gotta do something with those emails. I have to address them. So I cannot have 30,000 unread emails in my inbox. Because then it just becomes useless. And people say, well, I don't really use email anymore. I use text messaging or Slack or something like that. And I understand the value of that. But, you know, to read those messages, those emails, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have heard from others similar. If they really need to get a hold of me, they'll get a hold of me. They'll ping me again. But that might work for some. That might work for some. But I feel like I'm feeling a weight on my shoulders right now, that I'm living just in reactive mode. I'm living in for me, I would feel like I'm failing. If everyone else to tell me what it is I'm doing and when, I would feel like I'm failing. But for some, that works. And if that works, then email management is not something that would pique interest. But for others that maybe don't have 30,000 unread, but maybe you've got 700 unread or 30,000 in your inbox and you're listening right now saying, this is interesting, you know, I'd be happy to offer a discount code for my course if anyone is interested in checking that out.
Yeah, that's terrific. I wanted to bring that up because you did say you've distilled this down into a course. Tell me a little bit about, you know, how the course is delivered. Is it a series of videos or a series of blog posts, or how is that provided to a person? And then let's talk about the code that they can use to get a discount if they're interested.
Yeah, excellent. So the course, as I mentioned, it's on art@email.com, and it's actually built out in both Outlook and Gmail. They are videos, and the course is 14 modules. So it is designed where you can play a module. Each module, the videos run from 90 seconds to the longest one is, I believe, 12 minutes, and that's on the calendar section. And so in those 14 modules, the roadmap, if you will, is really first creating this behavioral change. So the why you would want to change your inbox, then it gets into the high level concept of art. I already talked about action, reference, tracking, and trash, but the high level is really going to create that behavioral change and teach the concepts to you so that by the time you're getting into module 7, which is the reference actionable module, that's helping you set up you're basically your filing cabinet. Where are the emails going that no longer have an action, but you want to keep them? And yes, it's folders, or in the case of Gmail, they're called labels, but they look similar. But it's also showing an effective way to organize them so that you are creating duplicative folders. You're not losing folders. You also, I'm a big believer in that left-hand pane of your inbox where your labels and your folders are. That real estate is only so far. And so it teaches how to organize them in a way where you're pretty much, if you're closing your cabinets or closing your high-level folders, you can see your entire world, your categories of where you're filing things to make it really easy on yourself. And it's not a one-size-fits-all meal. So I do in the course, I have some worksheets that are some pre-works to those modules that help you decide what you are going to call these folders. And so modules 7 through 11 are the beef of changing your inbox. And the course is designed where as you are watching these videos, you are actually changing your inbox. You're doing it alongside the video. So by the time you finish the 14 modules, you will have gone from wherever you are listening right now to inbox Zen, and also learning how to then take that behavior and go forward with it. So it starts to teach you just this natural, okay, this is an email I need to do right now. Like going back to David Allen, I need to do this email right now. Let me just handle it. This is an email that I need to do something, but someone needs to get me something back. And so I put that in my action folders. And so the course is built out that way. So modules 7 through 11 are reference actionable, action folders, reference archival, delegate, and diminish and delete. And then module 12 is calendar. That's a real beefy one that helps you upgrade your use of calendar in Outlook and Gmail. And then the last two modules are automation. So how to effectively use quick steps, rules, filters, and then wrapping it all up.
Perfect. And so they go to artemail.com to get some insight in this. And then if they so choose, you had a discount code you wanted to offer?
Yeah. So, and just so they know, the essential art plan, which is 30 months full course, plus I have a resource library where I'm constantly adding micro videos, again, 90 seconds to 3 or 4 minutes that show other ways to use Outlook and Gmail from both an organizational aspect, upgrade your use of the technology, as well as being more productive, that are not covered in the course. So there are additional videos in that library. And the essential plan is $159. So the course is very economical. And then there's some that go up from there, which also, if you so choose, will include private trainings with me or one of my art certified trainers. And so the code that I'd like to use is, I think you have one that is great for you. That's TLE20. So the Legal Entrepreneur 20.
Yep. Exactly. So TLE20 will get you a 20% discount on the ART system. So let's wrap this up by spending just a few minutes talking about delegation. Because again, it's a real skill that we as attorneys need to, you know, work on. It's kind of like going to the gym. It's not going to happen by magic. You have to work to be able to delegate effectively. So tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the thoughts that you promote in that area.
Yeah. I think we might have to do a part two and really go deeper into this because I could go off on a tangent, but I'll keep it up high level. So
I'm all for a part two, but let's tease that a little bit here.
Yeah. So I love acronyms. I love them. So I have an acronym I created around delegation called TORC, and that's what we can get really into part two. But effective delegation, it first starts with building that trust and respect. And by building that trust and respect, what I really mean is it's a two-way street. So it's not only you trusting and respecting who you're delegating to, but they have to trust and respect you as well, Neil. So if you're the one running the practice and you hire an associate and you give them something and the work product is not up to your expectations or they didn't meet your deadline and then you're frustrated with them and you treat them in that way, they're going to procrastinate because you stress them out and you're that underlying stress that they're carrying into a project. I'm not doing this. Why am I not doing this? I'm stressed out about it. And so it's easier to fail and say, I didn't have time to do it, than it is to put a ton of energy into it and then they aren't happy with your work product again. And so that's really an essential piece, is building that trust and respect as a two-way street. I won't go deep into the rest of TORC, but I'll just give a summary. It also requires you having time management skills on both sides. It requires that repetition of working together, because the first time you work together, new people, new processes, new projects, they are not going to be 100% of what you expected. So the repetition will help ultimately produce a better quality of work. And the last thing I'll say is what I was just talking about with delegation. I was really focusing on the human-to-human interaction, but there's a lot of other delegation out there, like automation, that you should and could incorporate into your practice, where you can delegate out your scheduling. You can delegate out some of the stuff you are doing, the repeat steps in your business. And there's a process there. And I know you've had guests on your show in the past, Neil, that can also help create those systems within firms. So there's a lot more to delegation than just the human to human, but my TORC method is really going into that human to human interaction.
I think it's so sorely needed, because the mistake, listeners of the program now, law is my fourth career. So I've had the opportunity to manage significant numbers of people in large teams in my past lives. And the mistake I see a lot of attorneys make when delegating work to subordinates is that they say, well, I hired them and I'm paying them and I expect them to do the job. Mm-hmm. So here's the work. And when they don't get it back the way they want, they're like, well, I'm not in the business of training them to be an attorney. I hired them because of their skill level. And that just, as you said, creates a level of stress that is unmanageable. And ultimately, it sabotages the whole experience. If you're not willing to, as you said, have that two-way approach to trust and respecting people when it comes to delegating work, it's never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Mm-hmm. And I think of things as simple as, how do you ask for the work to be done?
Yeah.
What's the language you're using? Now, I will tell you that I developed my skill set in that area in one of the first jobs I had, where I worked in a union environment. And so there were things you could and could not say, ways you could and could not behave because of union rules. And it served me well much later in my life when I would, you know, ask somebody who worked for me to do something. How you ask them, how you exercise that interpersonal skill is very critical to getting a good result and having a good, you know, delegation capability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I loved what you said about it sabotaging the relationship or sabotaging the experience, because I think there's a culture within law firms that as partner, you've earned your way and it doesn't matter how you're asking, you need the freaking work done. And
well, that's exactly
what you said. Yeah.
It's exactly the feeling I get from so many law firms, and it's self-sabotaging. It'll never work that way.
Right. I completely agree.
Yeah. All right. Well, Sarah, listen, this has been really fun. Let's get back together again and talk a little more about delegation. But until then, tell our audience once again how they can reach out to you and contact you about anything you had to share with us today. What's the best way?
Awesome. Yeah. So please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn, Sarah Tetlow, which of course my name will be in the show name.
Sure.
You can also go to my website at firm-focus.com. And on the contact page, if you want, connect with me. We can have a 30-minute one-on-one, no pressure. If you just have a question about procrastination or delegation, I am more than happy to spend that 30 minutes with you and see how I can help you.
Awesome. And don't forget, if you go to the ARTTemail.com and end up signing up for that course, be sure to use the discount code TLE20 for a 20% discount, which is very generous of you, Sarah. Thanks Absolutely. So much for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur, and I can't wait to have you back.
Thanks, Neil. Have a wonderful day, and get that affidavit done.
And remember, did you? Thanks. Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.